You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Hey, boys and girls. Today's word of the day is ass blaster. Can you say ass blaster?
Not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government.
11:55. Almost midnight. Enough time for one more story before 12.
You're gonna die up there.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Joy from HorrorNews.net, and today we got two very interesting but completely opposite guests. Later on, in the second hour, we're going to be talking with Michael Gross. You'll know him from the Tremor series, as well as Stephen Keaton on Family Ties, But before we talk to Michael, there's a show called Haunted Tours, and it's probably one of the most extreme ghost hunting paranormal type shows out there. We got a special interview coming up in just a few moments with the paranormal investigator, Stephen Urquintello. So, stay tuned.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
All right. Without further ado, we're going to be cutting into an interview with Stephen Urquintello.
All is now being recorded.
Hey, this is Michael Joy from HorrorNews.net, and you're listening to us on the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network, now on Spotify and Google Play. Today, I have with us Stephen Urquintello. I hope I didn't butcher that. I know I practiced it, and I don't...
No, perfect.
Hey, man. How you doing, Stephen?
I am doing well. I'm sunbathing right now out on the boat dock.
Must be nice. So you, my friend, are a paranormal investigator for the series Haunted Tours, if I am correct.
Correct, yeah. Paranormal investigator for Haunted Tours. It's on Amazon Prime right now. I believe it's actually still the number one paranormal show on Amazon Prime. A lot of people are getting that confused. It's not the number one show on Amazon Prime, but the number one paranormal show. A lot of people wonder why that is, how that is. And sorry, go ahead.
No, that's pretty impressive. Regardless, that's some good stats to be the number one paranormal show on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I mean, I think we kind of expected it to do well, but we didn't expect it to do it that well. And, you know, of course, you have the people that, you know, badmouth it and talk bad about, but those people talk bad about everything. So, you know, you kind of just got to brush that aside and just realize, you know, the people that do that, they're still watching it. So it's making the numbers go up, which helped make it the number one show. So can't really hate them for hating it.
So how did you get involved in this whole paranormal thing? Is it something you've always done, or is this something kind of fairly new to you?
Yeah, it's about 4 years old. I started about 4 years ago. I took about a year off. I was getting really bashed in the paranormal field and the community of it due to a technique that I started doing with the Ouija board and bleeding on the board, and I went live on social media with it, and it turned a lot of heads. So I took a break because, you know, a lot of locations were banning me. People were writing horrible blogs. Conventions banned me from there. So I kind of was like, you know what, I'm going to take a break. And, it's been about 4 years, but, you know, I usually say three only because of that break that I did. I literally didn't do anything paranormal during that time. You know, kind of like everybody else's story in this field, it all started as a kid. I think mine's a little different than most. I didn't really start seeing things. I think I created something. I grew up in a very bad environment. My mom and stepdad were alcoholics, they don't remember a lot of the things, the mental abuse, being bullied growing up. So I kind of isolated myself a lot and created, I guess you could say, an imaginary friend. You know, I would just talk to myself, but then start answering as well. Yeah, just an imaginary friend, I guess you would call it.
Sure.
And I started hearing, a couple months after I started doing that, I would hear replies back. It's going to sound crazy, but I would hear replies back in my head. But they would be in different tones, in different male, female, that you could tell the age difference. You know, I could tell between a kid and older man. It was really weird. Like, I was hearing these things, and then I started seeing things, and then the violence got worse, you know, of growing up, and things were really changing, and it just felt heavier and darker, and I think that's when things really kind of took a turn for the worse. I wouldn't say that the paranormal has always been drawn to me, or I've been drawn to it. I think by doing that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, you shouldn't mess with the Ouija board, you shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that, it's so evil. I think just talking to yourself out loud and creating these things, you know, people could say it's a mental disorder, but regardless of what you do, you are the number one tool, because all it takes is to start speaking to these things that aren't there. And then once you pay attention to them, I think that just gives it power. You know, it's just like any human to human contact. Like, me and you have never talked before. This is literally the first time we've talked on the phone. And now that we have, the vibes that we have, we're growing something stronger than what we were before we even talked. So it's the same thing on within that world. The more you give it attention, the more you pay attention to it, of course it's going to grow into whatever friendship that entity thinks it is, or whatever, you know, you just don't know what they are, because you can't see if it's good or bad or whatever. I can look at you and tell, okay, cool, you don't look like, you know, a crazy murderous rapist. You know, so there's a big difference when you can see the human and not see it. But anyways, I think that's where it kind of picked up from, and I stopped messing. Yeah, that was years passed by after that. I would say I was like 13, 14. That happened until I was about 17, and then I dropped all the paranormal. I moved out of the house, you know, I just went to California, traveled the country. And it was about 4 years ago where I was in my house watching Ghost Adventures, and I was like, I could do this, but better. Like, what are they doing? They're literally not doing anything of value. So I decided to try it, and ever since then, it kind of just blew up.
Okay. So let me just circle back, because I do have a couple questions from what you said to me about the voices and when it all started. Now, do you have any recollection of what was actually said to you, or is it just that, like, at this point in time, you just know things were said and you're not sure what they were?
I know that it was, you know what's crazy about that is, like, I don't remember, but this is what's weird is, I remember when I would go to sleep and I'd close my eyes, I would hear things like, hey, wake up, don't sleep, and they would say my name, Steven, so I would hear that, and I still hear that to this day, but, I would hear, it would sound like, and what's weird is I watch scary movies now, like demonic movies, you know, things about possession. And when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my God, I was like, that's what happened to me growing up. I was like, that's so crazy. I'm not the only one. If these directors and producers, whoever wrote the script, obviously had to go through this stuff to be able to understand that that's what occurred. And what it sounds like is I heard a bunch of people talking all at once. Like, just, I'm talking like if you're in the middle of a concert, but it's very faint. Everybody's talking at once, and I couldn't really pinpoint what they were all saying. And it would sound like also like dishes being thrown around, a lot of chaos basically going on in my head. And the more I started understanding the paranormal and, you know, mediums reaching out to me, psychics, I don't really believe too much into all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, empaths and all that would reach me and say, this is what you are. This is why you've experienced that and why you're experiencing certain things. And I kind of have no choice but to believe that, because if they've experienced it and they're open to it and they've accepted it, what's the odds of me and all these other people who experienced that and then being involved in the paranormal as well, being empaths and being mediums. So I'm not saying I'm a medium. I don't know anything about that, but I am very in tune. I would say I'm an empath. I've been told that too many times. It's kind of just coincidental that the tendencies and the characteristics of one is exactly kind of what happened to me and is happening.
Yeah.
But that's really it. I can't really, I just remember, I don't remember too much of what it would say.
Exactly. Okay.
I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, hey, listen, I watch a lot of horror movies and always have from, like, you know, the time I was, like, a little kid to now. You know, I've always loved that. And, you know, the fact is, like, you know, you watch all these movies about paranormal activity and, you know, they all have to be, you know, kind of based on something. So, I mean, you kind of always, like, think that there's some kind of layer of reality there. Case in point, like, you know, you're talking to me, and, like, immediately, you know, and I don't know if it's kind of the same or kind of different, but I'm flashing back to watching The Shining, you know, and, you know, that little boy, you know, hearing the voices. I don't know if that was kind of, you know, like, what you were, you know, going through or different, but, you know, it's, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've honestly never seen The Shining. I've only seen, like, the, what is it, when he kicks in the door, hears Johnny? Is that what he says?
Yeah. You've never seen The Shining?
I've never seen The Shining. Like, I've seen the famous scene where he's doing the tricycle and the two girls in the blood, and
Well, do me a favor. You have to watch The Shining. Take a look at it, check it out, and then get back to me, and let me know what you think, because it's one of my favorite horror genre movies growing up. Jack Nicholson is one of my favorite actors, and I mean, he just goes above and beyond in this role.
Definitely check it out. I've been needing to. I've heard it's like definitely an iconic major movie that really kind of, you know, made its indent in the film industry.
Sure. All right. So another question that kind of piqued my curiosity. You said you kind of got known for something that you do using a Ouija board and using your own blood. Could you kind of get into that a little bit more and like exactly what did you do and how did that help you? How did that help you process this whole paranormal thing?
Yeah, I was actually up in Gainesville, Florida, a small town outside of Gainesville, Florida, where my grandma and grandpa lived. And I moved up there to help my grandma out because my grandpa passed away and they live on some land. So I would go up there. Anyways, I'd go live on Facebook and do Ouija board experiments. And, you know, of course, everyone's like, oh, my God, that's so dangerous. Don't do that. And I just whatever. I wouldn't get into it with them. I'm like, you think, whatever. And anyways, I was like, how is it so dangerous? There's nothing dangerous about this. There's no energy. It's not electronic. You know, like spirits are supposedly electromagnetic energy, but the Ouija board's not electromagnetic. It's not a spirit box. It's nothing that has electricity with it to really spark the interest of an electromagnetic energy. So I was like, you know, what if I gave it, turned it up a notch or two, and put blood on it, put my own energy on it? And this was after I got attacked and bullied and everything. It's, you know, I took a break from it, and I said, you know what, I'm too passionate about this. If I'm going to do it, I kind of found my alter ego. I was like, you know, I'm going to do it my way. I don't care about the so-called, you know, unwritten rules of the field or whatever. So I decided to bleed on it. All I did was cut my finger, drip blood on it, and believe it or not, that really kind of opened things up more. Now, that the piece of plastic thing's never moved on me. I don't ever think that's ever going to move. It may have moved for people when they were a kid, but you're a kid. You don't know it. You know, you don't know what it did. So as an adult, I don't think it will ever move. Maybe it does for some people. It just hasn't for me. So what I do is I'll bleed on the Ouija board, and then to give it more power, I'll put the spirit box on it, which is just like a technology version of the Ouija board, except you get to hear the spirit's voice actually speaking.
Okay.
So what I'll do is I'll sit there and I'll do questions, you know, ask questions and do it that way. And it's crazy because when I go live, I don't sit there and tell people, oh, my God, did you hear that? It just said such and such. It just said such and such to manipulate the fact that, okay, maybe it did say that. What I'll do is I'll just let people know if you hear it say anything, everybody comment, write, say something. And they do. When I try to contact Zozo. There's an episode that I did where I did Zozo. It's on my Facebook page. And it literally says Zozo. It says demon. It says entering now. like through the spirit box, and everybody heard it saying it. I'll say, how many spirits are here with me right now? They'll hear a number. I hear the same thing, so I'm hearing it, but I'm not addressing that I heard it because, again, I don't want the manipulation factor.
Right.
So I think just dripping the blood on it really gives it legit energy. It gives it more than just turning it in circles and saying yes or no. And like I said, of course, you're still speaking to the dead. What happened to me when I was a kid? I didn't use a Ouija board. I had no tools. I just had my body. So why not use my blood and put it on the board, the most, you know, dangerous tool in the paranormal field? So, and then I took it above and beyond that. I put human ashes on it as well, mixed in with my blood, the wet blood. That really kind of turned, that really turned it up a notch or two. So, you know, I think giving something such power can give it more of, you know, an in-depth insight to the abilities that tools have or, you know, techniques have. So, you know, I think the aftermath effect of paranormal investigating is the worst than actually being there and experiencing it. Like for the Ouija board, when I put blood on it, human ashes, and ask all these dark questions, and I've told darker entities to come through, don't leave, attach yourself to me. I want to feel all the pain. I want to feel the hurt, feel the anger, feel the depression. Give me every little bit of energy that you have and linger on to me. And in doing so, I really started feeling it afterwards. You know, I've tried the suicide twice after, you know, investigations like that. I've feel the depression. I feel the pressure on my shoulders. I'm terrified sometimes. It really has affected me, but I asked for it. And I really think that because of that, using that, not the board, but giving the board that type of power.
Right.
And I think it would have worked either way if I use a spirit box or whatnot, but I just chose to use the Ouija board and do it because it's, you know, supposedly the most dangerous tool in the field. And basically everyone attacked me for it so they can all piss off. I did it to be vindictive towards them just so they can keep watching and keep bad-mouthing me. And it's gotten me to where I want to be. So who's, you know, it's then I went and got a Ouija board on my chest, tattooed
right
on my chest.
Yeah, you know, I seen that on social media. I did see that.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? I'm already branded for using the Ouija board. You know, that's what people think I do. I might as well just become one, become a walking, talking Ouija board. And now I really feel the effects of things because it's really weird. It's hard to explain unless you really get it tattooed on you and use it.
Yeah.
It's really weird, yeah. It's so, you know, like I said, it's the aftermath effects that really kind of mess with somebody. And I don't ever want to get cleansed. I don't want to, you know, sage myself. I don't want to cleanse myself. I want to experience every little bit of energy that the afterlife has. You know, I think that will bring me one step closer to them. And, you know, in the end, give answers a lot more in depth than just making a light meter flash from green to red or a flashlight going on and off. I don't think that's anything. That's not definitive proof of anything.
So, doing this TV show, you guys did one season so far, is that correct?
Yeah, one season. I believe we're shooting for season two in July or August. I want to say August. We're going to be doing season two.
So, in season one, if you could pinpoint, like, one episode that you guys did that might have been, for you personally, the highlight of that season, what would you recommend, or what would you say would, you know, was the most interesting from your perspective?
I would say episode 4. It always comes to mind. I think it's one of the better put together episodes. We're at the Cuban club in Ybor City. And it's where I put a gun to my head, told the spirits to pull the trigger. I made a pentagram, upside down pentagram in salt. I laid on it, used a Ouija board, of course, and really kind of opened things up. And I really think that's the biggest episode that I really recall the most, where things were happening. You know, doorknobs were shaking. We asked the spirit, you know, what are we standing in front of right now? And it said a mirror. There's there on the spirit box. There was just a lot of things happening in that episode. We couldn't fit it all into 45 minutes. It was pretty
wow.
Crazy. The lighthouse is also a great one in St. Augustine. I think we proved a lot of people wrong after 10-plus years of people capturing this so-called shadow figure. you guys can watch the episode, but we proved it wrong with a cell phone. If we can use a cell phone to prove that it looks like exactly like what everybody else has been capturing, especially, you know, these major networks who have been there.
Right, right.
If we did it with a cell phone, who's to say that they're easily not manipulating it with their billion-dollar network or their fancy cameras? You know, it's not that hard to do if we did it with a cell phone. So there,
sure.
You know, there's some good points in a lot of them. A lot of them have their own characteristics that really separate them from each other. And the techniques used, you know, I think the only technique that we use in all of them is the Ouija board.
Now, what do you think, doing this, I mean, it's, you know, I'm a horror fan, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I watch movies, you know, for the sole purpose of, you know, scare me, you know, give it your best shot. You know, I like to be frightened, you know, I like to be scared. So, I mean, not speaking about horror movies yourself, but what is there anything in your industry, in the paranormal industry, that scares you, or are you just accepted, or like, you know, you just flow with it, or is there something that scares you?
I think it all scares me, because in the reality of it, the dead should not be talking. Like, it doesn't make
right.
sense. Like, you should not be hearing these things. So it's scary. It just is. It's, you know, it's just like a horror film. If Freddy or Jason or them were real life and they were
yeah.
chasing you, you know, it's not like sitting there in a movie, oh, run, I would do this, I would do this. No, like, I've seen some well-put-together costumes at conventions, and they're scary looking. Like, there's seven-foot
yeah.
people walking around, like, legit big old dudes dressed like The Purge. I'm like, okay, that's intimidating. Like, in a movie, no, it's not that bad. But in real life, I'm like, oh, my God, if that thing actually came after me, like, what would I do? Like, I'm not a small dude, but I'm not 7 foot tall, 300 pounds, with a bat in my hand wrapped in barbed wire and grenades. So, you know, that stuff's pretty intimidating. So I would say it all kind of scares me. It's just because it shouldn't be happening.
Right.
Like I said, it's one of those things that, you know, and I do darker. I love to chase the darker type entities, the darker things, not necessarily demonic, but just things that even people that were evil in their life and
yeah.
died and their spirit's still evil, I like contacting them. So I think it makes it a little bit scarier when that's happening. You know, you get scratched, you get burned. Like, I've had 3 burn marks form on my arm and blister and open up. I've had a scratch down my side from under my arm go all the way down my side to my rib or to my hip. You know, things like that, that should not be happening. That's not everyday life if you know,
right.
you're hanging out, playing pool with friends at a bar. So when you put yourself in these environments, yeah, I think it's all scary, you know, and it definitely a lot of it could be mental. I mean, I don't know what a lot of people, how other people investigate. Some do it with all the lights on and weird stuff, but literally we do it pitch black. When you can't see your own hand in front of you and your shirt's getting pulled and you know you're the only one there, that's scary. You know, you hear your name being called or screams or cell door slamming. That stuff is scary. Like, and it's different watching it on TV and seeing it happen, but then being there and actually experiencing it, it kind of really, it gets to you. And yeah, it all scares me to this day, but some of it's like an excitement scare. Like, oh my God, that adrenaline, that was so cool, but I'm still scared, but I gotta keep going. And then other times you're literally, you could feel the energy change, and it's fearful. Like, you are literally terrified to walk forward or turn around. And
yeah.
it just depends, like, I think, where you are in that time.
Now, is there anything, like, obviously you're known for being extreme, and mm-hmm. the TV show is known for being an extreme show. Is there a line somewhere that you won't cross?
No, I'm not, no. I'll do everything. Like I even talked to, you know, the producer, you know, Jake and Brian, you know, the director and producer, I even told them, I said, you know what, one of these episodes before we even started filming, they wanted to know how, you know, we talked on the phone, and I told them, I said, one of the episodes, I want to die. I want doctors on set. And then I want to come back to life again. I want to see what it's like. And if I can communicate with you guys when I'm dead, but we need medical staff. We need to really bring me back to life. And so really, no, I mean, if I'm willing to do that, there's nothing that I'm not willing to do.
Well, yeah, I mean,
sense.
Like, yeah, yeah, that would be pretty much going to the most extreme place, I would have to imagine.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to go, you know, like the reason I put the gun to my head was because another man in Ybor City in that location at the Cuban club, he shot another man in the face. So it's not like I'm walking inside of a hotel where nobody's ever died, put a gun to my head, said, spirits, pull the trigger. Basically,
right.
I'm being the trigger object. We're not paying actors or actresses to do it and do all these retakes and reenact these things. We are, I am the trigger object. Like, I'm becoming what happened and what occurred to try to channel that energy again. So,
sure.
You know, for instance, one of these episodes, I'm going to cut myself and give myself live surgery. Literally wide awake, just like in these insane asylums where they used to do that to people. So if they used to do that to people, why not have that happen to me? That's going to trigger emotion for, you know, a residual haunting or an intelligent haunting to maybe come back out and really be like, oh my God, like, you know, it's like PTSD. How do we know spirits don't have that if we put ourselves in that position?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's really no links that I won't go to as long as it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm not going to go sit in Disney World and just cut myself open for no reason or, you know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So you talk about, you know, contacting the dead and, you know, you talk about contacting some of these people aren't, you know, the nicest people, you know, that, you know, you're trying to contact. So going a step further than that, have you ever tried to contact a demonic possession, like, you know, a demon, or is that something that hasn't approached you yet?
Yeah, when I did the Ouija board and tried to get Zozo, you know, the Ouija board demon, according
okay.
to mythological or whatever that is, I don't know. Yeah, I tried doing that. I will try to do that. Easily. Season 2, we're going to do a seance for the first time ever demonstrated on television, a legit real seance, sacrifice, everything. I'm bringing this stuff out. Like, I want people to see this firsthand. I don't want them to see a little shadow figure. That's cool. That's cool to see, but it's not believable. I mean, it's believable, but if that shadow, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, they've all caught these things, but yet
yeah.
apparently it's not 100% proof or everybody would believe, you know, and I get it. Some people, you know, oh, you know, I have to be there. I have to see it firsthand. Okay. So what I'm trying to do with the demonic stuff and the darker forces, and, you know, a lot of people disagree with this or agree, but what I'm trying to do with Haunted Tours, and it's going to come, is make it an interactive show. So the people watching are going to have control over what I do that's already been pre-recorded. It's almost going to be like a magic show, except I'm not a magician. The spirits are going to be involved as well. I have a layout for this on how I'm going to do it. Yeah. So it's going to be different than just, oh my God, there was a camera there. Did you just see that shadow figure run by? Now, we don't know what it was. We don't know how it got there because we didn't do any experiments to try to get it there, but it just showed up and ran by. Okay. Well, maybe if you tried like contacting, I don't know. It's just, there's so many unanswered questions, even though people think that they have found proof. That's only a perception based off their validation of what they believe is proof. That's not proof for the world. The
yeah.
true goal for a paranormal investigator and paranormal people, a team and everything, prove to the world. You know, it's like I've said this before on other podcast shows, you know, the paranormal is not a sport, right? It's just not. It's never going to be in the Olympics. Teams aren't going to go against each other. But in reality, if you break it down, it kind of is. It's a spectator sport. You have all these different teams. You know, you have Ghost Ventures, Ghost Hunters, Haunted Tours, all these other teams that, you know, are doing YouTube things. There's thousands and thousands of teams.
Yeah,
and why would it not be a sport? They're all trying to get whatever they can get and get the best footage and best evidence that they can get that's better or different than another team. Most teams work together. Yeah, okay, that's cool. But in reality, you know that one team wants to get the better footage and become the first team ever to prove that it exists. I don't care what they say. It's just the majority want that. They want to be able to do that. And what do football teams do? They want to win that Super Bowl trophy. Well, the paranormal, that Super Bowl trophy and that ring is being the one who can document the greatest footage. So in a way, it's a spectator sport. And, it, you know, it's just that's what it is. So
no, I mean, I have a
topic with that. But.
No, it's great because, I mean, I absolutely agree. You know, the fact that, I mean, you know, there are, I don't know how many shows are out there, but, I mean, there's tons of shows out there. And, I mean, you know, if you're doing a show, I mean, it makes perfect sense. You want the best to be on your show and not someone else's. And that's with any type of, it doesn't matter what kind of show. It could be a comedy, it could be a drama, it could be reality, there could be, you know, whatever. But you want,
yeah.
Right, you want the best.
Yeah, you want McDonald's to be better than Burger King if you work for McDonald's. You know, you want Publix to be better than Walmart. You know, whatever it is, it's all business. When you get put on TV, it becomes a business, period. You know, that's it. If you're making money off of it, it's now officially a business. It's a brand. If you're not making money off of it, I mean, you're still probably trying to, but, you know, that's what it is. It becomes a business. When it becomes a business, it becomes competition. That's just how it is. And people can say it's wrong, it's right, but that's the reality of what it is. Me, I'm not chasing it for fame. You know, a lot of people aren't. It just happened to be that way because I'm different. I'm unique. I'll do things that other investigators. There's not a single paranormal investigator out there willing to do what I do.
No, I can't imagine there would be.
There's not. So that's what separates myself differently, which is going to draw eyes to me. And I'm not doing it for the attention. It's just how what I'm willing to do. So, I mean, and that's really it. It's I don't know.
There's one more thing I needed to ask you. Seriously, so season number two, from what I understand, and this sounds like it would kind of be a big deal. Is it true you guys would be going? Well, no, but we talk about demonic possession, but the polar opposite of that, you're going to try to contact Jesus Christ. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think I'm going to get shot when we go over there and do that. So many people are going to literally think that I'm mocking, you know, Jesus Christ by, you know, reenacting everything, get whiplash, put the barbed wire thing around my head. Yes, I'm going to go to those extremes. Yes, I'm going to have someone do that to my back. Yes, I'm going to put the barbed wire, what was it like? Thorn hat, on my head. We're going to reenact the whole thing. And it's not to mock him. Again, it's about channeling that energy, you know, being the trigger object. He was the object. He was the sacrifice for, you know, whatever people believe. I'm not going to get religious on everybody because my beliefs are way different than what everyone reads. But, and then crucify myself. Now, I am not going to put spikes through my hands. It's just not going to happen. There's no way that's going to happen, but I'm going to tie myself to the cross and we're going to try and experiment. We're going to see what happens. We're going to just, you know, cover myself in blood, fake blood, and use the spirit box. I got the Ouija board on my chest and we're just going to see what happens. I'm very terrified. I know people out there take it religiously to the extreme. Like, I'm very terrified of being on the cross and getting shot while I'm on the cross. Yes.
Yeah.
We are going to have security around us just in case. We don't know how far we're actually going to get with it because, you know, if a bunch of people come up and start, you know, really getting involved, we're not going to be able to follow through with the whole thing. So, but yeah, that is the plan. That is the goal. Our passports are ready. Everything's ready to go. So it's just one of those things about doing it and seeing how far we can get with it before the government kicks us out or before somebody gets shot, basically. That's kind of how I see it going down. I really don't see it happening to the end, but we're going to push, you know, the best way that we can. Maybe people will like it. Maybe they won't, you know, over there. Maybe they'll love it, but it's definitely going to turn heads when we get back to the States. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, from everything you've talked about and everything I've known before I talked to you, you know, I love what you guys are doing. You know, I love that you guys push this whole thing to the extreme and, you know, aren't afraid to take chances. Because that's what it's about, taking chances. So, I mean, you know, kudos to you and everything that, like, you have gone through and are willing to go through for, you know, the sake of, you know, this ability of yours.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I guess, is there anything that we haven't covered that I didn't ask that you wanted to relay to, you know, the public, people listening?
Not really. I think, you know, actually, yeah, you know, I want to talk about possession real quick. A lot of people, I did a podcast show the other night, and a lot of people, I went to go touch a topic on this, but then something got brought up, and we had to change the conversation, and a lot of people were messaging me wanting to know about how I feel like everybody's possessed. So I'm just going to touch topic on that real quick, if you don't mind, so they can watch
please.
It rather than me having to explain to everybody. Okay, cool. So my theory on possession and how we're all possessed is quite simple. the definition of possession is ownership of something. Now, Hollywood has made possession to look like it's some evil, demonic, it's scary, oh my God, you're possessed, there's the devil in you, you know? But in the reality of it, possession is just ownership of something. Now, when you stop and think of that, the vessel that we're in, right, the human skin, we're in the bone, the, what you're in, what I'm in, what everybody is walking around in is possessed by the spirit and the soul that you have. It's just a personality. So when you die, your spirit goes out into wherever it goes to, but your vessel falls down. Now, if you weren't possessed and your spirit wasn't controlling and having possession of, you know, the object that you're in, your skin, your bones, and the vessel you're in, then when you die, it would get up and walk away. It would continue to walk. But it doesn't have that power anymore. It doesn't have that ability because your soul, the possession of whatever it is that's possessing you, your personality, your voice, the way I speak, the way I think, that's my soul. That's my personality. When I die, that's going to go wherever it is that I go. It's going to remain the same. Same with yours, same with everybody's. In a way, we're all possessed. But people think, oh, I'm not possessed. That's evil. That's this. It's not. That's, how is that so? Like, that's not what the definition says. That's what it may say in the Bible. That's what it may say in religious terms. That's may what it says in Hollywood or in the paranormal, you know, dictionary. But that's not in the real world. And the paranormal is, it's almost like its own real world. The people in this field, literally, I think most of them have mental disorders, and they really don't think. Like, they just don't think. And it's crazy to me. It's so that's my, what I believe possession is. I do think we're all possessed. I actually wrote a book about that, and it's not out yet, but I'm going to put it out. And I mean, it makes sense. To me, that makes sense. So,
No, actually, it makes a lot of sense to me. What's the name of the book that you're putting out?
I actually don't have the name for it yet right now. I'm trying to think of that because, there's a lot of topics on the Ouija board, the possession that I talk about, residual and intelligent hauntings, and how I believe that a lot of the intelligent the residual hauntings that we find, which a residual haunting is basically, I don't know if you know what the difference between residual and intelligent hauntings are, but say we go to Waverly Hills. Go ahead.
Yeah, please explain. I want to know.
Yeah, so say we go to Waverly Hills. It's a sanatorium. I probably said that wrong, but it's in Kentucky. It's a well-known paranormal place, so that's why I say that, because everyone knows about it. Now, let's just say we go there, and we say, hey, is Beth here? Beth, can you speak to us right now? All of a sudden, it says Beth. It says, hey. It says something relevant that it is Beth right away. That would be an intelligent haunting. It's answering our questions. It's asking. It's talking to us. A residual haunting would basically be like a footprint embedded into the atmosphere. It's something so dramatic and traumatic that happened. Like, let's say I was slaughtered. Someone kicked in my front door. They raped me. They gut me. They hung my intestines all over a ceiling fan. That's pretty intense. So, say they did that at 1:30 p.m. Now, theory has it in the paranormal field, and it's all theory-based. No factual situations are going on here. But theory-based has it that since that was so dramatic and traumatic, it left an indent in the world's atmosphere. So every day or every week or whatever it may be, or maybe the year anniversary of me dying like that, at 1:30 p.m., you're going to hear my screams. You're going to hear whatever it is that I did, because it's indented into the atmosphere. It embedded itself, kind of like the boom, whenever, you know, the space shuttle breaks down there, boom, you hear that, right?
Yeah.
That's it. So here's my belief on that. I think a lot of the residual hauntings we hear aren't from the dead. I think they're from people in general that have left their experiences there with them. Say we go to Waverly Hills and something touched me or touched somebody and I scream and freak out. That's still enough energy that can be embedded there. So now whenever somebody else goes to Waverly Hills 5 years from now, they hear that scream, and it's at 3:33. How do you know that scream is from a ghost? How do you know it's from that? It could be my voice that you hear, because I left it embedded into the world's atmosphere. I think a lot of the residual hauntings we pick up are literally still from the living to this day. Has that been proven? No. Will I be proving that? Yes. I'm going to do an experiment for a month long inside of a location, and I'm going to document what I hear. I'm not going to tell people how I'm going to do it, because then somebody else is going to take that idea. But I'm going to prove that residual hauntings are literally 99.9% positive that they are still from the living. Are there some that are dead? Yeah, of course. But I don't think they all are. I think a lot of them have to do people that are still alive to this day. Because think about it. When you go to ghost shows, you watch ghost shows, you hear it say on a spirit box, it will say a name that doesn't even represent anybody that's ever died there. no name picks it up. You're like, why would it say Charles when nobody's even died here that begins with a C? Well,
right.
Maybe it said that because somebody got so scared there and they yelled, Charles, you know? So that right there, that energy embedded it right there, but you don't know that. Maybe if you backtracked and figure out, hey, did anybody ever investigate this place named Charles? Cool. What time were you here, Charles? Let me contact you. Wow, it said it at this time? Cool. Boom. Residual haunting. That makes more sense than it saying Charles and nobody ever dying there, but you're going to say, oh my God, there's a portal here. It just said Charles and no Charles ever died here. There must be a portal to hell here that opened up and people are walking through. How does that sound? That sounds crazy, right? Like, that sounds crazy. So, but it doesn't sound crazy if you actually do the paperwork, do the research, do what paranormal investigating should be done, and that's backtracking steps and finding a paper trail. When you can no longer find a paper trail, when you can no longer find any evidence or shred of proof that that's what it could be, then it becomes paranormal. But shows don't do that. People don't want to do that. That takes effort. That takes time. And it takes away the ratings. It takes away the fear factor of it. It takes away that power that you deliver to people and that manipulation factor. It's easier to believe that than to really do the work. You know what I mean? So I'm willing to do that work. I think it'll be really cool to basically shut down the paranormal field. I know that sounds so bad, but I mean, imagine how that, what if that all gets proven? And then literally that just puts everybody to shame for the last 20 years. They're like, none of that could be true. Your favorite TV show is literally for 20 years running has literally just been proven wrong by facts.
Yeah, you say, it actually makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm walking away from this interview today with some knowledge that I didn't have before I started talking to you. And that's a great thing.
Sure.
Because, I know some, I think I know a little bit more now, you know, and, you know, I'm listening to you and I'm listening to like everything that you're explaining to me and to all of us. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know what, that actually does make sense. That's very cool.
So if somebody else tries doing this a year from now, it's been documented on your show that I came up with that. Nobody else.
Yeah.
They stole my idea.
There you have it. This has been a fantastic interview. I love talking to you today. I think we've really dived into a lot of areas that, are going to open up some people's eyes. If you want to restate, where can we see your show?
Yeah, Haunted Tours. You can go to Facebook. It's just type in Haunted Tours. It'll be the first one that pops up. And you can go to Instagram, type in HauntedTours_TV. You could follow us on there. And definitely Amazon Prime, just type in Haunted Tours, and it'll pop up there as well. We do have a YouTube channel, but it's not really, you know, we don't really focus too much on the YouTube channel. You can also go to the Jalbert Brothers, which is Jalbert Brothers, and they put a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff up as well with what they do, and they're actually documenting like their own mini, you know, 14-minute, 15-minute episodes that we do when we go travel. So they kind of do a lot of cool stuff there, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. So, yeah, Amazon Prime to watch the show, Facebook Haunted Tours, and HauntedTours_TV for Instagram. We don't really mess with Twitter too much. That's really it. I mean, we post different things on the Facebook page compared to the Instagram page and vice versa. We go live every now and then. There's just a lot that we're kind of, you know, we're jumping around doing a lot right now. So, yeah, that's really kind of it. Yeah, I do a lot of free giveaways. If you find me on my page, I'm not going to give out my page on Facebook, but if you see me commenting or doing something on the other pages, you can easily add me on Facebook. I do a lot of free giveaways for autographs stuff and personalized handwritten letters that I'll write to everybody, mail out to you if you give me your address. And, you know, I think that's kind of cool. Nobody really does that, you know, personalize a letter and handwrite it and mail it out with cool autograph stuff for free. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I just think that's kind of cool to do. So yeah, that's really about it, man.
Okay. Hey, you know, again, it's been a great interview, and I would love to follow up with you, you know, 6 months or a year from now, and then go through all this stuff again and see, you know, how we've kind of progressed from, you know, this point moving forward.
Yeah, maybe during the filming of season two, we'll all be there together. Maybe we can just go on speakerphone and we'll do a interview together.
That would be fantastic, man.
Yeah,
all right, hey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Steven, thanks a lot. It's been my pleasure.
Awesome, and I'll talk to you guys later. And thank you for everybody tuning in, too.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm black man, saving mankind, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is a perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
A scientist named Frankenstein made a monster by sewing together parts of old dead bodies.
You have to read that stuff.
Wait a minute. Frankenstein gave the monster eternal life by shooting it full of electricity. Some people claim it is not dead even now.
Uh-oh.
Just dormant. Now, who'd be silly enough to believe that?
Who would be silly enough to believe that? Me.
Hey, this is Michael Joy back with you on Hard News Confidential. And, wow, what a fantastic interview about the paranormal. I don't know if you guys believe in that type of thing. But, you know, it got me thinking, and I think I shared this on the radio one time before, or maybe I didn't, but let me just, back when I was 10 years old, my grandma had passed away, and there was a story, you know, basically that was told to me by, you know, my mom and my aunts, and it kind of went like this. Since my grandma was very sick and she was living with my aunt at the time, and they lived way up on Trevenant Mountain in past the Poconos in Pennsylvania, really isolated, not a whole lot of things around, a lot of farmland, that kind of thing, you know, a lot of horses and cows, and, you know, I remember, you know, going up there, going up the mountain sometimes when we were driving, you know, especially, it gets really creepy because in the morning or like at night, you get this really dense fog that you have to drive through, and you can't even like see your hand in front of you, and like you're basically driving up the mountain like that. Some of the scariest things like I've ever, you know, witnessed. But you know, but anyway, my grandma, she had this room that she stayed at my aunt's house before she passed away. My aunt used to do ceramic classes in the basement. She said people from the surrounding towns used to drive up there, and you know, she taught, you know, how to paint, how to, you know, do the ceramic molds, you know, that kind of thing. Well, you know, fast forward, everyone was you know, I guess getting together and, you know, talking about, you know, my grandma who had passed away, and someone was knocking at the door. So my uncle went to the door. No one was there. And now, you know, granted, you know, you gotta think about the context of this. There's like, this is a farm in the middle of nowhere. So, I mean, no one just comes and knocks at your door, you know, unless you know them, or, you know, maybe someone breaks down or something. So we went back, you know, whatever, they're eating, having coffee, you know, what have you. Knock at the door again. All right. He goes back up, opens the door, steps outside, walks around the side of the house, nothing. This happens maybe three or four times where every time he goes back, there's like this knock at the door, boom, 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 boom. So they're like beside themselves. They're like, well, what's going on? You know, I don't understand this. So one of the one of my aunt's friends said to my aunt, my uncle, there's no one at your door. What do you mean there's no one at the door? Well, that's your mom. She's banging on the floor. Because when she was there and when she was alive and when they were downstairs and doing these ceramic classes, my grandma had a cane, and when she needed something, she used to pound the cane on the floor, and that's how my aunt would know to come up and get her, you know, something to drink, something to eat, or medication, or whatever. So it's just one of those things, like everyone looked at each other, and it's like, oh my God, you know? Now, you take that with a grain of salt, take that for, you know, whatever it is, and it's not, you know, I think everyone probably has their own ghost story. Everyone has their own, you know, relatives or friends that, you know, have been through something or have maybe seen something or felt something that was maybe a little unworldly. I mean, it's up to you if you believe that kind of thing. But the end of the story, basically, they went up to investigate the room, and the entire room smelled like basically a fresh bouquet of flowers. And then it was just like, there was no flowers in the room. It was just like, oh my God, you know, once again, you know, like a stunning kind of event. But it was like, you know, she's trying to contact you. You know, she wants you to know that she's okay, or, you know, whatever you believe. But anyway, that's my little take on the story. So thought that might entertain some of you guys.
Have you ever thought about my responsibilities?
Oh, Nick, what are you talking about?
Have you ever had a single moment's thought about my responsibilities? Have you ever thought for a single solitary moment about my responsibilities to my employers? Has it ever occurred to you that I have agreed to look after the Overlook Hotel until May the 1st? Does it matter to you at all that the owners have placed their complete confidence and trust in me, and that I have signed a letter of agreement, a contract, in which I have accepted that responsibility? Do you have the slightest idea what a moral and ethical principle is, do you? Has it ever occurred to you what would happen to my future if I were to fail to live up to my responsibility? Has it ever occurred to you? Has it?
Red Rock. 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 Red Rock.
Danny, what's the matter, hon?
Red Rock.
You having a bad dream? Danny?
A little bit of The Shining. Played that for my friend Steven, who has never seen The Shining. I can't believe it. I can't believe someone hasn't seen that movie. It's such a fantastic movie. But anyway, I thought Big D was going to be joining us today, but haven't seen him call in yet. But I just wanted to go through a few things. If you've been following me on Facebook and Marketing Macabre, then you know about some projects that's coming up. You know, one that stands out and one that's gotten a lot of media attention most recently is Ghost House. This is the remake of the 1988 Italian cult classic, directed by Umberto Lenzi. Excuse me, Umberto, if I pronounce your name wrong. you'll hear me all the time apologizing to my guests about their names, because I'm like, always question myself whether or not I'm actually butchering their name, or, you know, I'm doing justice to it. But yeah, I just wanted to take an opportunity to plug Ghost House, and the director, Dustin Ferguson. He's doing a great job of basically trying to bring these older cult movies back to life. And you know, whether you call it reimaged or remade, or, you know, whatever, or rebooted. He's got an Indiegogo campaign, so I would definitely check out Indiegogo and look for Ghost House. Throw him a couple bucks, you know, to try to pay his crew and, you know, get everything together, because, I mean, these are the movies that, you know, we want to see made. You know, we want to see some of our favorites. And hey, you know what? I am the most critical person when it comes to remakes. You know, a lot of people are for them or against them. You know, I have this whole love-hate relationship. You know, I mean, you've heard me on here from time and time again, you know, trashing, you know, a couple remakes, but praising others. I don't know what the formula is for creating or recreating, a cult classic. Fact is, you can't recreate a masterpiece, but I do respect directors and artists who, want to pay respect to, you know, that movie that they loved when they were younger. How do you pay respect? You know, try to do it your own way, you know, put your own footprint on there, your own stamp, make it your own, but at the same time, holding the original values of that project close to your heart. So it's, remains, close to the legacy of what that film is supposed to be. I don't know if I'm rambling. I don't know if it makes any sense. It makes sense to me. Maybe it makes sense to you. I don't know. But also, listen, I want to tell you about a film festival. You guys got short films or feature films. It's Scum Dance Film Festival. They have an early bird deadline. This is a very affordable film festival, guys. It's a no-brainer to enter your film in here. The deadline is coming up on May 31st. It's an early bird deadline. So you still get a chance after that, but, the price goes up. So, right now, get your film in early so you don't have to pay a whole lot of money. The second year, last year, these guys played the artsploitation hit Red Christmas, starring Dee Wallace. I got a lot of publicity for that. A small film festival. It's a one-day festival, but try to support these smaller films and these smaller film festivals, because that's where it all starts, and then once it gets popular, then hey, maybe you guys get bigger, start to make a little bit of money. Right now a lot of these guys aren't making anything, so I definitely support that. A short film that I know submitted there, and this is a short film that is really incredible. It's like animation, like spoken word over like a collage of like it's a really cool animation. It's Bible Black, and it's by John Morey, and this guy's got a vision. It's an incredible vision. It's very cutting edge. It's very, controversial. It talks about love and God and, the whole struggle. It follows a girl, Lobster Girl, who has this, I forget what it is, but I guess some kind of, some kind of ailment, disease, funky thing where she has lobster hands, lobster claws. And, basically it's about these guys that have a relationship or try to have a relationship with a Lobster Girl, and, how that even turns out. It's twisted. Dude, it is so twisted. It's one of those things where highly, highly recommend it. Again, Bible Black, check it out at film festivals across the U.S. I know it's going to be, hitting a couple of them. I know it was submitted to Scum Dance. So, cross your fingers. Hopefully that's gonna come out pretty soon.
Attention! there is a very fat pair of pants hanging on the flagpole this morning.
All right, well, that being said, we got a second interview coming up, and that's with the one and only Michael Gross. You'll know him from Tremors, and you, of course, know him from Family Ties. So that's gonna be pretty cool. It's coming up in just a few.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
All is now being recorded.
All right, Michael, you're on the phone with Michael.
Great. Michael Joy, how are you?
Hey, doing okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Gross and your new movie, Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell. Michael, you have been doing this for, my God, almost 20 years now. You've been fighting off these graboids and ass blasters. I don't know. I consider you an action hero at this point. What do you think?
I guess so. To be honest with you, it's over 20 years. The first Tremors appeared in 1990. Do the math. That's 28 years ago. It's closer to 30, which is amazing. And who thought it would come this far? I don't think of myself as an action hero. I guess I should, but I'm a character actor. You know, I'm an action hero in this guise. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be playing a gay man on a Netflix show. And so I think of myself as an action hero in there. So it's like I love the variety. In a sense, I don't want to be anything but, you know, a great smorgasbord of characters, you know. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I guess I don't feel actors have an identity. Although I must say, you know, some of the greatest careers are made by being action heroes, a la Schwarzenegger, or, you know, the big people where people get rich, John Wayne and Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone. That's a whole different thing. They are action heroes in a certain way. I'm just an actor who occasionally appears as an action hero. That's the way I think about it.
I hear you. But you do a great job at it, I got to tell you.
Thank God I'm still in good shape.
That's good, right? You got to, you know, to fight off these creatures time and time again.
Exactly. You got to be fit, man.
So, this new Tremors movie, from your perspective, what makes this a little different than the other ones that you've been in?
First of all, we are in a very different location. We have left the dusty Southwest. In most cases, all these Tremors films have been in very arid locations, Nevada, Mexico, South Africa, places like that, and we're taking it into the Arctic region, which is something very different. This was an idea we started tossing around a couple of years ago, saying we've been to all these places, what makes sense for us, and in terms of changing it up, and we started talking about global warming, the permafrost melting, all that sort of thing, and what if these creatures have been locked in, you know, entombed in ice, suddenly are being freed by climate change. Yes. And so it seemed like a natural to us. And let's just, for variety's sake, let's get the hell out of the warm climates and go somewhere else. Of course, the irony in this case is it was warmer up in the Arctic region than Bert ever thought it would be.
Oh. Where did you guys actually film it?
It was actually filmed in South Africa. And I will tell you something, just, you know, this is no secret, the place that they had chosen for snow was
right.
So snowed in that production would have been almost impossible. They had chosen, and it's just that logistically, it would have been a nightmare and cost them time and money, and it proved impossible. So we couldn't, so there are parts of this there that are, you know, I mean, so we, so it's standing in for the Arctic. Somebody once said at some point, oh, it's good. It's like, I said, one of the producers was saying, oh, this will be fine because South Africa has penguins too. I said, wait a minute, no. Antarctica has penguins. The Arctic does not have penguins. They have polar bears and other things. So I'm afraid the penguin stand-ins will not work for us because we're in the Arctic, not the Antarctic. So, you know, we went through all that sort of nonsense. But, yeah, it was too cold and snowy for us to work in our first choice, and so we wound up somewhere else.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah. But the main way this has changed, so that's one big change. The second change, the most obvious, is Bert is facing an obstacle he's never quite dealt with before, and that is something that was a little beyond his control. Have you seen the film? You've seen the screener?
You know what? I haven't yet. I'm looking forward to actually reviewing it. So I'm anticipating.
I don't want to give away too much. That's what I was debating. If you've seen it, you'd understand this. But Bert is facing an obstacle beyond just the monsters here. That is a very personal obstacle, and that is I won't give away too much by saying it's having to give up some measure of control, and that's very difficult for a man who believes in being in control at all times. So in that respect, we're challenging him in ways we haven't before. Fighting monsters is easy. Fighting yourself is hard.
Okay. You know what? You actually like kind of segue into my next question, because I was actually going to ask about Bert Gummer, and you know, during the course of all these movies, the whole Tremors franchise, how do you think your character has changed along the way?
Well, in some ways, I felt in the first three films, he hadn't really changed very much, in the first three in particular. He was good at what he did. Everybody joked about him and gave him a hard time about his lifestyle, but it always proved to be the lifestyle that was necessary to fight monsters. Now, in some cases, he was self-defeating. He was always more prepared than he needed to, and sometimes over-prepared, and things didn't work out. Monsters had changed, and he was prepared for one sort of monster, but instead was fighting another, there was a certain sense of, but Bert knew what he was doing, but Bert, the character, wasn't changing very much. The fourth one was a prequel, and that actually got more interesting for me, just as an actor, because the arc of that character was far more interesting. He started out as this somewhat effete, snobbish man from the East who found himself in the West and hated everything about it, disliked the climate, disliked the people, disliked the rough life, was used to better, looked down his nose at all these people and the way they lived, but had to go through a more profound change when he realized that he was not going to abandon those people, actually had some attraction for a certain woman in that piece, who was the hotel owner, and decided to stay and fell in love with guns and the defense of this community that he had once looked down on. So sure. That to me was a far more interesting journey just as an actor. What is the beginning, middle, and end? You know, where's the sweep of history of the character? And that made it interesting for me. And so when we came back to five and six, I said, where do we find the challenges for Bert? Personal challenges rather than professional challenges. The professional challenges he has down. We know this man can fight monsters. Where personally does he have hurdles? And that's why we decided to introduce the character of his son. For a loner to be confronted with the fact that there's a blood relative out there who's saying, I'm yours. It's like, what do you mean? I don't want to be anybody's, you know? That was a hurdle, just to bring this person into the fold and to accept him. I'm just trying to present more psychological barriers and hurdles for Bert as we go on. So that's, I think, part of the evolution. He's far more interesting when he has personal crises as opposed to just professional ones.
Yeah, and your son, you mentioned, is played by Jamie Kennedy.
Right, right.
How's the chemistry between you guys?
Very good. It was we took a while to get to know each other because Jamie works far more spontaneously. You know, he's up in front of a stand-up. He's a stand-up comic in many ways. He makes things up on the fly. So we had to find a way of working where we did the piece as written first, and then we could do some riffs, if you will. Then we could improvise and play with it. But the agreement was we do it as written, and then we try some other things, because he likes to do that. I'm more reluctant simply because Bert is far more of he's a very precise character, sometimes very understated. And I have to search for his voice sometimes because it's very unique. It's comic, it's strange, it's comically paranoid, it's obsessive compulsive disordered, and I don't always have that voice right. So sometimes I try to mess with this dialogue and get it just precise the way I want it for Bert. And I'm afraid to go off script too much because I'm afraid I'll lose that any jokes may come from somewhere other than character. I always want them to come out of character and situation.
Right.
I'm afraid if I say something funny in improvisation, the director goes, "Oh, that's great. We're going to use that one." It's like, well, yeah, but it doesn't sound like Bert. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to be very precise. So I'm more reluctant to improvise than Jamie is. But that's not to say I won't. As a matter of fact, in the final film, there is some improvisation from me that I thought was entirely appropriate for Bert. I think works, and it was kept. It was kept. So, you know, I can work any number of ways. I have a background in improvisation as well as scripted work, but I don't know. I feel Bert is more elusive for me sometimes, and I have to get it right. I have to go through several drafts to get a line right, just the way Bert would say it, you know?
Right.
And, Michael, we have time for one last question.
Okay. So I'm going to make this a fun one. So we all know that, you know, Bert Gummer can fight these guys. You know, you've been doing it for almost 30 years, like we've talked about. So how would you say Stephen Keaton would fare against these graboids?
You know, I think he'd be way too animal rights. You know, he'd be out there saying, "Do not kill that thing. Or sedate it before you kill it. You know, it's suffering. It's suffering for God." You know, I think he and Bert would have a hard time together. Bert is about expedience. Bert is about doing the job. And I think Stephen would be a little too touchy-feely for Bert.
I totally agree.
Bert has traditionally... He's put his life on the line for certain people, so it's not as if he doesn't have a generous soul in some ways. He's put himself in the middle of conflict, put his own life on the line, and has, particularly, let's say, like in Tremors 4, where he has the ability to run, but he doesn't. He says, "By God, I'm coming back to that godforsaken town called Rejection, and I'm coming with a load of guns." You know, he sells his pocket watch and exchanges it for his prize watch and sells it for, you know, exchanges it for some armaments. So the character of Bert, or the character of his grandfather Hiram, was not at all, he's not selfish, but he's very different than Stephen Keaton. Stephen's a little too, well, let's consider this side, let's consider that side. And we don't want the animal to suffer. And Bert is like, "Oh, please, kill it already." So,
right.
That's the big one. I think they'd have a bit of a problem.
Michael, it has been fabulous talking to you. Thanks for giving me some insight on the whole, you know, Tremors franchise and your character. This was a real blast for me.
Thank you, Michael. It was no pun intended, a joy. So thanks again.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
Hey, there you have it. My interview with Stephen Keaton. Michael Gross. So, pretty cool for the Tremor fans out there. And if you've been taking a look at the horror news, then you know about the Tremors, not just the movie that Michael was talking about, which is Tremor 6, A Cold Day in Hell. There's rumors circulating that Tremors 7 is already, more than a thought, and it's something that they definitely want to do. And not only that, but the big news is the Tremors TV series, which will star the original star of Tremors, Kevin Bacon. Right now, I think rumors are flying around that Sci-Fi might be the channel that grabs that, but who knows? The way Netflix is getting original programming, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up having a Tremors TV show. But it's gonna be cool. They've definitely done something with the franchise to keep it going, and everyone, particularly Michael Gross, has been in it 100% the entire way. So kudos to him for reconstructing his career after being known as the dad, the family sitcom guy, and I called him an action hero during our interview. And he's not an action hero, but not too far removed. Let's take a look at horror movie action heroes. Let's take a look at Bruce Campbell. It's that guy. It's got some witty lines. He's got some artillery power. He's got some pretty cool weapons, and he's going up against the monsters, the creatures, the zombies, the vampires, the ass blasters. So, basically that's what Michael Gross has kind of transformed himself into. He walks that same line as, an actor like Bruce Campbell, where he keeps coming back because he loves it. It's a cool character and it's a cool story to be around. So, Tremors, check it out. Especially this upcoming Tremor 6, it's going to have this whole new dynamic to it, as Michael was saying. I just mentioned Bruce Campbell, and certainly, he's in the news right now because, a lot of fans are crying over it. The fact that Ash vs. Evil Dead is canceled after its third season, and Bruce Campbell said that he's finally putting it to rest. This is going to be the end for him playing the character of Ash. What do I think about that? Well, everything, all great things must come to an end. And, as much of a fan as I am, I realize that, it's best sometimes to call it quits before you run the franchise into the ground. And I'm not saying Bruce would run it into the ground. I'm not saying that at all. But, stop when you're ahead. You ever hear that phrase? I mean, seriously, there's been so many movies, TV shows that have gone through, you know, the sequels and the prequels and the remakes. Some of them do it right. Some of them do it real right. And they turn out to be fantastic. But then there are those who do it very poorly. You know, earlier you heard me giving my thumbs up and giving my support towards the remake Ghost House. Hell yeah, go for it, man. Do the best you can. Let's see a kick-ass movie. But don't make it like Amityville Horror from a couple years ago. Or don't make it like The Fog from a couple of years before that. And especially don't make it like the remake of Psycho starring Vince Vaughn. No one needed that movie. No one wanted that movie. And after it was over, people were trying to forget about that movie. You know, these are the things, these are the reasons that I cringe. And this is the reason why horror fans are so anti-remake. You know, it's because of these couple movies that dropped the ball, tried to remake a classic, and, you know, what went down in a ball of flames, you know. Seriously, these movies were, at best, the drizzling shits. You know. But, you know, hey, that being said, there's also another movie on the horizon. And the world is talking. It's all a buzz right now. The Return of Halloween. And the rumor machine earlier this week was pumping out all kind of things about, there was a screening, and the test audience shit all over the end of the movie. And then later, John Carpenter came out and said there was no such test screening. What are you guys talking about? It's not even, you know, it doesn't even have a final cut yet. You know, I mean, I guess we should have seen the writing there. I mean, it is so far away from a release date. Why the hell would there be a test screening now? You know, I'm sure they don't have it edited to nearly where they want it to be. I'm skeptical. I am skeptical because, you know, there's a, you know, it's my favorite horror movie of all time, as it is thousands and thousands of horror fans. So there's a whole lot of anticipation. But there's a whole lot of butterflies, too, because you don't want it to be messed up. People hold Michael Myers sacred, and the mask, and the theme music, and everything to do with that movie. But it's cool that Jamie Lee Curtis is coming back. You know, again, I got to grit my teeth, you know, because, you know, I've seen Halloween H2O 20 years later. And that was okay. But now we're talking about 40 years later. And, you know, seriously, I mean, it's been said. Now we're talking about Michael Myers and Laurie Strode being close to being senior citizens. realistically, that doesn't sound appealing to me. But it's a horror movie. Suspend disbelief. Forget about all that. Try to put that to the side for 90 minutes to 2 hours, however long the movie's going to end up being. I'm going to put my faith in the directors. I'll watch it, and then at the end of the day, like all you guys, you know, there's going to be a majority that's probably going to love it, and then no matter how good it is or how bad it is, I mean, you're going to get the group of people out there that's going to crap all over it, hate it, give it bad reviews, give it thumbs down, give it negative stars. You know, it happens. You know, going into it with a lot of anticipation, but I'm not going to go into it thinking it's going to be the be-all, end-all of horror movies. There's only one Halloween. You know, there's only one original. And then it's cool that you want to continue franchises. You just hope that the people steering that wheel don't steer it into, you know, a ditch. There's a lot of talk about this being the very last Halloween ever. Like, there's no more. Like, whatever happens here, and that's it. Do I buy that? No, I don't buy that. I think as long as there's money to be made, there's a couple characters in the horror genre that are timeless, and they're going to go on forever. I mean, you know, back in the golden days of horror, you know, you got your Frankenstein and Wolfman and Dracula, and you know, here we are almost a century later, and they're still making reboots of those movies. They're still doing new and exciting things with those characters. So, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and 70s and 80s, loving those horror movies. That's where my passion lies. But, like I said, you know, there are these characters that are going to live on forever, and they are going to be Michael Myers. They're going to be Jason Voorhees. You know, I want to say Freddy Krueger, but, you know, there's only one Robert Englund, and just not sure about if anyone can ever replace him. They tried. They failed. But, I mean, definitely Myers and Voorhees, because it's all about the mask. You don't need dialogue with those guys. Not to say anyone can play those characters, but I mean, seriously, any good actor can, you know, put on a mask and, you know, slaughter some kids. You know, it's all about how it's presented. It's all about what the director can do with it. And that's all we can, you know, strive for is, you know, putting our faith in the filmmakers. So, I don't know, there's my 2 cents on the Halloween H4O. I don't think it's going to be called that. I think that's just a rumor. But, anyway, guys, this has been Horror News Confidential, and I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate everything you do. You know, we're looking to book some guests for the coming week. Some pretty cool stuff. I'll be posting it on Facebook. Look for the information on the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network, as well as horrornews.net. And I guess that's probably about it for now. I'll talk to you guys soon, and I hope you enjoyed the show.